Are you worried that a market collapse like 2000 and 2008 could constrain or delay your retirement? Or maybe you're sitting on a pile of cash earning nothing? If so, call us and request our complimentary booklet, Common Sense Investing. Hi, it's Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer of Bulwark Capital and host of Know Your Risk Radio. We'll show you how you can protect your retirement portfolio against loss, but still participate in market gains. Safety doesn't have to mean lower returns. Our clients have increased their returns while being insured against loss. Stocks, bonds, and real estate are all at record highs. So why risk it? And like our client Dory Monson says, go from retirement hoping to retirement planning.
I am indeed a client, and I recommend Zach to you. Get Zach's booklet, Common Sense Investing. Call now. Get your free copy, 866-779-RISK, 866-779-RISK, or go to knowyourriskradio.com. Bulwark Capital Management is a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
Opinions expressed in this program are for general information purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. Any indices referenced for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional. Bulwark Capital Management is an investment advisor representative of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
Welcome to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham on AM 770 KTTH. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Know Your Risk Radio is brought to you by Bulwark Capital Management, helping families navigate the ever-changing and often treacherous financial markets. Know Your Risk Radio starts now. Here's your host, Zach Abraham.
All right, welcome to the show. Crazy times. Crazy week. Of course, there's been a lot of those. It's not really an outlier, right? It's what's new? Another 700-point drop on the Dow. Trump drama. Budgets. Walls. Crazy. But as always, we got a great show planned for you. Actually, we say it every week. I think I say that every week. But we really do. We got some great stuff. I braved the great nor'easter of 2018 this week. Barely made it back. Thank you to my lovely wife. And I want to talk to you a little bit about that because I was in Manhattan for 3 days this week. And got to spend some time with a really fascinating individual. And I want to talk to you guys about that. And then we've got a shorter interview. Usually our interviews go long. We got a shorter interview with Kevin Muir, the author of the Macro Tourist blog. And if you don't read his work there, you can find him on Zero Hedge. You can find him on Yahoo Finance at times. Since we started talking to Kevin, and I'm going to take all the credit for it. Right, it's this Saturday Seattle-focused radio show. I hope you're paying attention, Darren. we need to be credited with the launch of Kevin's notoriety. And of course, I'm joking. But it was really cool to see. It's cool to see it because I started following Kevin on Twitter, or the Bulwark Capital Twitter page started following Kevin on Twitter. Because he's got great insights and he's got real working experience, decades in the markets, and he looks at things differently, and I think he's a brilliant mind. And it's cool to see his career taking off. He's back running a fund again, which he should be. And anyway, he's going to join us for a little bit today, and we're going to revisit something. Like I said, I've got a lot of topics to talk about. I had a really interesting client meeting yesterday. It was great. It was productive. It was also unfortunate. But a great illustration of what's going on out there in the world and how you really, really need to be careful about what you're doing and careful of who you're listening to. So we're going to talk to Kevin. We're going to have another discussion about volatility. And that's one of my favorite topics to discuss because it really amuses me. It well, not really. I should be used to it by now, but it really amuses me. I find it incredibly interesting how so many people are willing to talk at such great length with such great conviction about things that they clearly know nothing about. And look, when saying that, I'm not holding myself up as somebody that knows everything or somebody that knows, you know, more than everybody else or whatever. I'm not even trying to say that I'm an expert. But what we talk about and what we talk to our clients about and what we invest in is things that we understand. It's things that we've researched. And not because we're great people. I do not understand the willingness for people to put nonsense out there and, you know, eventually make themselves look like complete fools. And even though they might be smart people, might be well-informed people, might be talented people. And I think that it really reinforces the old Warren Buffett adage, right? Invest what you want in what you understand. Now, that doesn't mean that you should just, you know, ignore everything else, but it means that you should educate yourself before you go into something, you know, new. And the most important aspect of understanding what Warren Buffett, if I can fill in for him or fill in the gaps in that statement, is what he's really talking about is understanding the risks. Right? The old adage, where are the bodies buried? What are the potential pitfalls? What are the potential headwinds? And again, you know your risk radio, right? I think the biggest pitfall, and this will go into the client discussion that we had yesterday with a listener, is the understanding of risk, right? The grasping of risk as a concept and how it works. So without further ado, let's get into market updates. Obviously, you're all probably pretty aware of the Thursday drop. As always, we're recording the show on Friday. Market looks a bit rocky, but pretty close to even. Tech's taking a bit of a hit. I hope you've been keeping an eye on oil, guys. We started talking about inflation creeping up, oil, gold, things of that nature, probably about 4 or 5 months ago, and it's coming. I believe WTI oil hit 65 today. That doesn't mean go out and buy oil or oil stocks. It's just really what we're looking for that is a gauge of inflation, right? The fact that the omnibus spending bill just passed, that is not going to help the cause. Well, depending on how you define help, right? That should perpetuate dollar weakness. We should see that trend continuing. And then the tariff story, right? Heating up with China. And again, we've spent a lot of, it's hard to know which side to listen to. So we've spent a good amount of time looking into this. And here's, if you wouldn't mind, and I don't want to truncate or shorten the market update, but that's about it, guys. We're continuing to look at valuations. And when you see market drops in value regimes like we're currently in, where you've got markets that are historically overvalued, it doesn't necessarily mean anything. Don't read too much into it. These things happen. The other thing that we've seen happen, and I'm gonna finish the tariff discussion in a bit. I just don't want to. It's gonna be easy for me to spin off on that one, so I'm preparing for it. But the other thing that we've got to think about, and we'll talk more about this in the next one of the upcoming segments about volatility, is that one of the reasons, and this makes sense, and to some degree it should be the way it is, when volatility is low. When volatility is historically low, we would expect higher asset prices because asset prices reflect a lot of things. One of the things they reflect is volatility, right? If a price is going to be steady, if we know that a price of something is going to be steady, relatively steady, we're more confident owning it. Therefore, we will pay a higher premium to own it. But that knife cuts two ways. We are looking at volatility now for a month that has traded pretty steadily with some occasional spikes up, but between 15 to 20 on the VIX. That means we have a higher volatility regime. Is that saying volatility is going to dip? It's not going to dip below 15? No, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is we haven't seen volatility at levels like this in a sustained manner for probably, you know, don't quote me, but it's probably been 5 to 6 years. So when you increase volatility in swings, you decrease appetite to own that asset. So that should contribute to a fall in valuations. Am I saying the Great Panic's coming up? No, but I'm just saying, you know, don't overread into it. Now, don't ignore it, right? These are the things that happen in overvalued markets. It's just, you just have to know that, which is why it goes into managing your risk, right? Which is what we focus on. So now getting into the tariff side of the discussion, wanted to shine some light on this. This really is a double-edged sword too. Here's the catch. Some of this has to be done because of the way that China is operating their economy. They impose tariffs. They do not respect IP laws, meaning intellectual property laws. I think a lot of us know this. They subsidize steel. They subsidize virtually every industry in some form or fashion, even if it's not direct. They subsidize the lending. And what I mean by that is if loans go bad in a certain sector is tipping over, they will, the PBOC, the People's Bank of China, will infuse capital in there to help stabilize that lending situation. That's a form of a subsidization, right? So you got the people sitting there going, oh, this is great. This is amazing. You got people going, oh, Trump's going to cause a trade war. But as always, truth lies somewhere in the middle. And we'll have to see the way this plays out. What I do know and what I feel very confident in is that you can't get China to play it straight unless you're holding, you know, unless there's a sword of Damocles hanging over their head, right? You know, there has to be some type of threat. Otherwise, they're getting their cake and they're eating it too. They're not just going to come to the table all of a sudden and say, hey, you know, for the good of everybody, we're going to quit manipulating markets. We're going to quit dumping steel. We're going to quit imposing tariffs of our own. You know, in a Mr. Rogers neighborhood world, that might work, but it's just, you know, so, and I think we all know this, right? No matter what Trump does, even if it's things that liberals like, which ironically tariffs should be one of them, that's kind of been a party line for a really long time, they're going to throw the book at him, right? They're going to attack it. It's just what they do. I mean, you don't think these people are really operating with the public's best interests at heart, do you? This is complete kabuki theater to them. Which explains the whole budget scenario, right? I don't really think that they perceive that reality is what it is, right? I don't think that they think the bill will ever come due. It to me, it's all about retaining power and winning from one election to the other, increasing seats in the House. I mean, that's the game. So tariffs in and of themselves are not good. I don't want to make any bones about that. They do start trade wars. However, if you don't tariff somebody that's tariffing you, you don't have free trade, right? So if you have matching tariffs, ironically, that's more of a state of free trade than what currently exists. So I think there's just a ton of, well, like everything else, there's a ton of hyperbole surrounding that. So anyway, got to get rolling. But as for the market update goes, look, guys, manage the risk. I can't say it enough. Way too many people are overconfident. You know, I was talking to a guy yesterday, smart guy. Guy's done a really good job saving for retirement. And I said, you know, in the event of a 40 or 50% pullback, and he looked at me and he laughed. Not disrespectfully, but he said, 50%? Oh, come on. And I looked at him and I said, do you know what the long-term PE average price to earning average multiple on the S&P 500 is? And he looked at me and said, no. And I said, it's 15.8. Do you know where we currently are? And I said, somewhere between 25 to 26. So a 50% pullback, a 40 to 50% pullback would get us back to the long-term average. Am I saying that's what's going to happen? No, but don't be shocked if it does. Again, if you understand mathematics, we should understand that everything reverts to the mean. We may have a really strong arm. We may be like Felix Hernandez or Russell Wilson. We may be able to throw the ball really high up in the air. We may be able to throw the ball so high up in the air that we can't see it anymore. Does that mean that we'd start laying bets, betting it's not going to land? No. And markets are no different, guys. It's trajectory. They'll return to their long-term average. They always have. They always do. So when you see markets this elevated, you don't run and hide. You don't try to time them, but you guard against the risks. because it's just a matter of time. This time isn't different. Maybe it's a year, maybe it's 2 years, who knows? But what we know is that upside is relatively limited. Where? Could it go to 30? Sure, on the Dow. Is it going to keep running forever? No, of course not. And when you're this overvalued, chances are you're going to have an ugly downswing. And not to mention other geopolitical risks. I just think in general, what we see is clients way overexposed to risk and also not getting compensated for it. So as always, if you've got questions or if you want to set up a free phone consultation, give us a call, 866-779-RISK. We did like 7 or 8 phone consultations this week. It's always my favorite part, just getting to chop it up. Just talk shop. And, you know, I think some of those people will become clients. Some of them won't. We're not going to call you and keep pestering you. We'll just tell you what we're doing, how we're lowering fees, increasing upside, and lowering risk. It's simple as that. And you can also go to the website, which I would encourage you to do, knowyourriskradio.com, because we're going to be posting something very important that I'm going to talk about in 2 segments from now. And I'm going to post it this weekend, and it's something everybody needs to read because it is a disrupting factor in the world of finance. It is a paradigm shift that nobody's talking about, and if they are talking about it, they're completely on the wrong side of the fence. And we're not making a prediction. We're pointing out what's currently been happening, okay? So I'd encourage you, check out the website, knowyourriskradio.com. We're going to get that piece of information up there for you this weekend so you can check it out. Anyway, we got to take a quick break. Stay with us. We're going to be right back with Kevin Muir of Macro Tourist Blog, have a discussion about volatility in the markets in general. So stick with us. You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
Are you worried about running out of money in retirement or being a burden on family members due to an extended healthcare situation? Hey, it's Story Monson. I want you to go see Brian Ott with 525 Advisors. He's the host of Long Term Care Radio right here on Cairo every Saturday morning at 7. I want you to see Brian because 3 out of 4 of us will end up in a long-term care situation during our retirement years. And if you're not prepared, it can mean watching everything you've worked hard for get whittled down by the high costs. Family members often pay a price because they're forced to put their lives on hold, but you can protect yourself and your family. Do what my wife and I did. Go learn about the new options available at Brian's next long-term care planning class. You'll learn about the newest options, including plans that pay you back if you never use them. It's free. It's coming up April 7th. Brian will even give you a copy of his book, A Guide to Long-Term Care Planning. Sign up today. Go to 525longtermcare.com. That's 525longtermcare.com.
Are you worried that a market collapse like 2000 and 2008 could constrain or delay your retirement? Or maybe you're sitting on a pile of cash earning nothing? If so, call us and request our complimentary booklet, Common Sense Investing. Hi, it's Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer of Bulwark Capital and host of Know Your Risk Radio. We'll show you how you can protect your retirement portfolio against loss, but still participate in market gains. Safety doesn't have to mean lower returns. Our clients have increased their returns while being insured against loss. Stocks, bonds, and real estate are all at record highs. So why risk it? And like our client Dory Monson says, go from retirement hoping to retirement planning.
I am indeed a client, and I recommend Zach to you. Get Zach's booklet, Common Sense Investing. Call now. Get your free copy, 866-779-RISK, 866-779-RISK, or go to knowyourriskradio.com. Bulwark Capital Management's a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
All right, welcome back to the show. And as I teased in the first segment, we've got a special guest with us today returning. And he's actually only our second returning guest, but we had to have him back on. Kevin Muir, author of the Macro Tourist blog. Kevin, thanks for joining us today.
Great to be back with you.
And we're excited to have you back on because the last time we had you on, and I'm going to get right into it so we don't soak up too much of your time, but the last time we had you on, we had a good lengthy conversation about volatility. And since we last talked to you, and I'm not sure you're aware of this, but there's been some interesting developments in the volatility markets.
Yeah, I actually got a call right to just proving that the blind squirrel finds an acorn every now and then.
Yeah, right. The broken clock theory, right?
Yeah, that's right.
I thought about calling you, and we're going to talk about this later in the show after we're done speaking with you, but I thought about calling you and wanted to get you on the air specifically today because I had a interesting client meeting yesterday where a client was in a what they thought was a relatively safe, nothing crazy, but, you know, steady earning fund. And they looked at their statements, and at one point, I think they were down 65, 75% over that 3-day period when vol exploded. And they later found out that one of the ways that they were generating returns in the fund was selling vol. And now this wasn't an ETF either. This was some kind of mutual fund, which really blew my mind. But right. it really reiterated to me something that I know that you've written about, and I would love to hear your thoughts on it. But I think vol is just a perfect example of this, right? That I look out at the marketplace right now, and I see, maybe since the tech collapse, I don't think I've seen so many people owning so many things that they don't understand, that they don't fathom the risk. You know, they don't know the inherent risk involved. Is that how you see things? Do you think that this is a new paradigm, or do you think this is just a repeat past cycles?
Yeah, no, this is completely a new paradigm. The financial repression that is happening is forcing people out the risk curve.
Right.
Think back 10, 20 years ago, you know, you could go out and buy a bond that was yielding a positive real yield. Difficult to buy anything with a real yield, and it's forcing people. It's not only is it like the nominal yield, but the actual real yield after inflation is even lower than it's ever been. So you know, look at the whole world is starved for real yield, and that's why you're getting people kind of funky things like going out and buying products that are based upon selling volatility.
Okay, so now on to the valuation in general, because this is another part that I'm still trying to get my head around. And we've seen it really prevalently here in this the volpocalypse, and then recently the market shakeout afterwards, and even what's going on today. Now Dow's down about 1,000 points in the last two trading sessions. Or over that now. But the thing that scratched in my head is I look at this environment, I look at these valuations, and that value investor inside of me sits there and, you know, I'm drawn magnetically to the cheapest, the things that are overlooked, the things that are actually cheap, where I see value represented. The amazing thing to me is those types of assets are performing like penny stocks, while the 10, 12, 13 times revenue type companies that are insane are hanging in there like stalwarts, like blue chip value. What is that all about?
Well, I think this is something that we see at the end of cycles often. Green light, Michael Einhorn he's a famous hedge fund manager, and he recently had a letter that he wrote about the death of value. And he was lamenting about the fact that all of these stocks that are value are getting cheaper and cheaper, and the things that are the growth stocks are getting more and more expensive, just like you mentioned. And what this reminded me of is a time in 1999 when another famous hedge fund manager, Julian Robertson, had a similar position. He was long all sorts of value stocks and short the high-flying.coms. And he finally couldn't take it, and he tapped out and hung up the gloves right as value stocks were bottoming and tech stocks were topping. And I just kind of wonder if we're going to need the same situation where one of these famous value managers is going to have to give up before we finally get these stocks behaving and starting to rally again. But this is typical for the end of the cycle kind of situation.
Yeah, it reminds me of, and you'll have to correct me, you might know it better, you might remember the name, but it was either Intel or maybe it was AMD or whatever. One of their CEO gave a speech in 2002, and he was asked specifically about the dot-com bust. And he said, look, he goes, it doesn't matter how good my company is doing. If you're buying my stock at 10 times revenue, he goes, you're assuming that over the next 10 years, my revenue growth isn't going to stop, that I'm going to have no cost of goods sold, that I'm not going to have to pay taxes, that I'm not paying employees. And he basically looked and said, you know, don't blame us. We weren't the ones bidding up the stock. Do you remember that guy?
I think that it might have been Scott McNeely for with Sun Microsystems.
Yes, that was it.
That does ring a bell, and I do believe that he went through the valuation of his stock, and it was just difficult to imagine that anyone had ever paid that because it was so preposterous that they were ever going to be able to make enough to justify those valuations.
Yeah, and in a lot of ways, and I was trying to explain this to a prospect yesterday, in a lot of ways, it's very reminiscent of the real estate bubble. And you know, I think there's more similarities with that in the tech bubble. But I was trying to explain it with a client. I said, you know, does it seem ridiculous now that people believe that real estate could go up, you know, 8% per annum into perpetuity? And they said, yes. And I said, okay, well, it's ironic that people willingly grasp that and willingly accept that as reality. Yet at the same time, their portfolio is filled with stocks that, and this is the incredible part to me, stocks that are valued at over $100 billion. We're not talking about a small corner of the market, right? We're talking about these massive behemoth companies in terms of market capitalization that are growing revenue at a decent pace, maybe 20, 22, 23% a year, but trading at 10, 12, 13 times value or revenue. And so they'll accept the reality as it relates to real estate house prices. But then they expect that the laws of value don't apply to these insanely priced high flyers. It's a head scratcher.
You're absolutely right. It just shows you again that markets make opinions and not the other way around.
Boy, isn't that true? That's I'm writing that down, folks. okay, so where are we at on the vol thing? Like I said, you and I were singing very much the same tune on vol. I'm looking at this now. With volatility today, we've got the VIX right now hitting 25 or peaking over, probably a little higher than that as we got a delayed quote on that. But I'm looking at this right now and it very much feels to me like a regime change in volatility. I know that term's getting thrown around a lot. The one thing that I think I haven't heard people talk about, and you know, don't feel bad about correcting me on my own show. This is why we've got you on. But I look at when we jump from 9 to 10, and we basically averaged probably between 10 to 11 on the VIX for 3 years, something like that. When all of a sudden we jump up and now we're looking much more normal, which is funny to hear the Jim Cramers of the world decrying this crazy VIX, right? I see a VIX trading between 15 and 25 and that feels normal, as I think it should.
Right.
But if that is the new normal, don't valuations have to come down?
I'm not sure. If you go look at the 90s during the dot-com bubble, valuations were going up along with volatility. Too many people mistakenly believe that volatility has to mean lower stocks. Volatility just means that that the stocks are moving around more in price.
Right.
And generally, that has always been the case that it's moved lower faster than it's moved higher, but that doesn't have to be the case. And volatility, actually, when you look at the actual math of it, it doesn't matter if it moves up or down. It's just that traditionally markets have moved down faster than they've moved up. So I could see a situation where you could actually have volatility staying elevated and going even higher, even if stocks go higher.
Really?
And yeah, for sure. I don't think that they have to be inversely correlated like everyone assumes. I could just go look at, and the other thing that's difficult is people toss around volatility, and it's a dangerous instrument for most people to trade. There's so many elements of it that are kind of difficult to understand, and just like that example you gave of that family that got devastated by that position, it's not something that anything but the Wall Street pro should probably really be trading. There's so many kind of intricacies of it. It's you're not even betting on volatility. You're betting on what implied volatility will be in the future. So it's a very complicated, sophisticated instrument that really it probably never should have become anywhere near as popular as it did.
Yeah, no, we've said that, and we've done really well. Trading volatility. You'd truthfully be told, over the last 3 years, we've done better trading volatility than we have actual stocks. We're not traders on the stock side of it. We're value guys. But and I don't say that tongue in cheek. I certainly don't say that with an air of arrogance. I say it with humility. You know, we're studying these things constantly. We're watching the charts. We're looking at you know, option pricing and term structure and all these different things. And if you don't know what those things are, it's not guys like, and I want to make this clear to retail investors, it's not guys like us sitting there saying you're not smart enough to do this. It's guys like us saying you don't know what you're playing with, right?
And that is absolutely correct. And let's face it, some of the pension plans didn't even know what they were playing with, because this apocalypse that you talked about, it wasn't just retail that got hammered. It was also a lot of pension plans that owned some of those products.
Again, there's not an air of arrogance in my voice when I say this, but I continue to be absolutely dumbfounded that institutional investors were selling volatility with a VIX below 10. That to me is just asking to get your head ripped off. But like you said, I think really it's the only explanation, right? Is that financial repression of people just doing irrational things, trying to generate alpha in a portfolio. I think it's really the only thing that makes any sense.
Yeah. So when back to my point about the 90s, when volatility went up, you have to be careful that you're looking at historical volatility as opposed to implied volatility.
Right.
Because if you look, the implied volatility might not have risen, but I believe when you go back to the charts, you'll see that actual historical volatility was rising in those final 2 years going into the dot-com crash.
Okay.
So I could see a situation where you actually get more and more volatility, even if stocks don't necessarily go down, and maybe even have a final blow off top.
Okay. Now, we've done the rehash, we've done the postmortem here on the Volpocalypse. I need to patent that, by the way. I was really proud of myself when I came up with that one. There's a piece that you wrote recently, and I have described you before as my spirit bearer. But there's a piece that you wrote recently that even caught me a little bit off guard and really made me stop and think. And you were questioning the whole relationship between, you know, clearly we're late cycle. What does that mean? Who knows? But we're certainly late. But you spoke about how investors need to be careful and question their beliefs that during the next downturn or the next big market crash, that sovereign yields go down, corporates get smoked. And I might be butchering this a little bit. I should have brought my notes, and I forgot I'm sitting on my desk when we came to the studio today. But you know the piece I'm talking about. Walk me through what you were thinking there, and kind of give me your outline and your framework for that piece.
Okay, so first of all, I think everybody always hedges for the last crisis.
Right.
So everyone imagines 2009's in their mind, and everybody thinks it's going to look just the same. So they think that in 2009, there was all sorts of problems with credit. And what happened was the corporations couldn't borrow. And so bonds of those corporations went no bid. And everyone wanted safe assets. So they all rushed into treasuries and other sovereigns. And what you had was spreads. That's called a credit spread. And those blew out. And, I think even Carl Icahn created a video that went through it and outlined why he was putting on those same trades, because he expected the exact same thing to happen. And I think this was 2-3 years ago he made this, but I think it's still up. It's called The Danger Ahead.
Yep.
So maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Carl's going to be right. He's obviously way richer and, you know, way wiser than I am. But I kind of think that if everyone's looking for one thing to happen, that surely that's not what's going to happen. It's going to be something else. So I look at the dangers and I worry that what's going to happen is you're going to find that central banks and government are going to keep printing and printing and printing and spending and spending and spending until, as one day, as my favorite buddy from the West Coast says, Bill Fleckenstein, he says, one day the bond market's going to take away the keys.
Yeah.
So I actually think that that's going to be the trigger of the next crisis. So I don't think it's going to be an economic downturn that's going to cause the next major crisis. It might cause a market to go down, but the next major crisis is going to be caused when government spends so much that they cause the bonds to go no bid, the sovereigns to go no bid. And that's what I was speaking about. I was saying that if you think about the absurdity of how much the governments are spending and how much debt they have, and then you think about how you're going to protect your portfolio against that, doesn't it seem kind of ironic that you would go and buy the very asset that they're creating? So there, so all these kind of bears go out there and they tell me, oh, you need to go buy sovereigns because there's so much debt in the world. Well, I look at it and go, there's so much debt and they're creating so much debt. Why would you buy the thing that they're creating so much of? And the one point I had about the spreads of corporates versus sovereigns is that if you think about a highly rated corporation, you're basically buying a bond that is secured by assets, whether it be real estate or machinery.
Right.
And not only that, it's actually enforceable by a third party, the government. So that asset is there, and you know that if something goes wrong, you can get it. Well, if you go look through history and realize how many governments have reneged on their own promises, it makes you wonder if all, when we go through this next cycle, when there's too much debt in the world, how many governments are going to renege? And if you think about it, they're the ones that are actually setting the rules. So why would it make sense to buy an Italian sovereign bond over, you know, one of the large corporations in Italy, like a AAA?
See,
or a Spanish bond.
Yeah. This is why I love having you on, because you know, one of the things that I've thrown around my mind is sitting there looking at it. Now, obviously, they don't have a printing press, but if we're looking in terms of creditworthiness, and we sit down and we remove the titles, right, and we sit there and look at the balance sheets and the creditworthiness, and do a traditional breakdown of credit, and you know, look at it the way that we do when we're analyzing whether we want to buy a bond or not. And sit a 10, even, you know, and I'm not saying this is going to be the case, but even a 10-year U.S. Treasury next to a corporate issued by Apple, right? What is the more solvent entity if you took away the names? What's the better play on the return of your equity or the return of your capital? And it's not even close.
No, you're absolutely right. And so I could see a situation where you actually have investors realizing that the risk of, you know, I like, don't get me wrong, I don't think the U.S. is going to default on their debt.
Right.
I don't even think they're going to change. I think most likely it'll get printed away and it'll get inflated away. But if you're somebody that's sitting there in charge of an endowment, and you have to think about these risks, that you actually should be considering the fact, if you go look through history, that governments, you know, default with an alarming regularity.
Right, right. Actually, there was a piece that I read, and I'm blanking on it, but it was a comparison of sovereign defaults to blue chip corporate defaults, and it wasn't even close. The blue chip corporate defaults were much, much more rare occurrences than sovereign defaults. Are you familiar with that?
No, but I'd love to see it. If you figure it out, please pass it along. I'd love to read it.
Yeah, I'll dig it back up. And if you're just joining us, we're speaking with Kevin Muir, the Macro Tourist blog, soon to be dipping his toe into managing other people's money. So,
I'm the market strategist.
You're the market strategist. Gotcha. Okay.
Yes,
gotcha.
That's correct.
Gotcha. All right. So, in closing here, and I know you got to get running. You're a busy guy, but in closing, we do not do specific stock recommendations on the show for all kinds of legal reasons, as you can imagine. But give us an idea of what it is that you find interesting, you know, just speaking in general terms, and kind of the things that you're really paying attention now that we've had this vol explosion. What are the things that you're keeping your eye on?
Well, I really like the European market in terms of the stock market. And I think it's bombed out. Nobody likes it. The euro's been it's kind of been bearing the brunt of the U.S. dollar sell-off, so it's been more and more difficult for the European companies to compete. I actually have a piece in my blog recently about the EBITDA margins of European versus U.S. stocks, and I was kind of shocked to find how much better the European stocks have done lately. In terms of their margins, and even with that, and don't forget EBITDA is before interest, so I kind of expected it after interest with Mario Draghi's printing press keeping rates so low, but I was shocked that even the EBITDA was getting better. I think that you're going to find that if we get a pause in the dollar sell-off and we can get the euro back down, that you might find that European stocks are kind of something that people should have a look at.
You know, the thing that interests me is the minute you said that, there was something inside of me that kind of cringed. And I mean that complimentary, because whenever I feel that, it always makes me sit there and go, okay, Zach, you got to take another look, right? You've got to look where other people aren't, and you need to take a quicker look at that. And that's why we have you on. Give us that variant perception, right?
The cringeworthy kind of chat.
Yeah, that's right. No, and it's the mentally stimulating, right? It's if everybody loves it and all your buddies at work are talking about how you've got to buy this or that, it's a sell signal, right?
That's right.
You got to run. Well, hey, Kevin, as always, man, really appreciate you coming on with us, and we're really interested in keeping an eye on the development of that new firm that you're launching and you're getting involved with, and keep us informed along the way, and hopefully we can pick your brain here in the future and have you back on for an update.
It's been great talking with you.
All right, Kevin, take care of yourself, excuse me, and thank you guys for joining us. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back. You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
Are you worried that a market collapse like 2000 and 2008 could constrain or delay your retirement? Or maybe you're sitting on a pile of cash earning nothing? If so, call us and request our complimentary booklet, Common Sense Investing. Hi, it's Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer of Bulwark Capital and host of Know Your Risk Radio. We'll show you how you can protect your retirement portfolio against loss, but still participate in market gains. Safety doesn't have to mean lower returns. Our clients have increased their returns while being insured against loss. Stocks, bonds, and real estate are all at record highs. So why risk it? And like our client Dory Monson says, go from retirement hoping to retirement planning.
I am indeed a client, and I recommend Zach to you. Get Zach's booklet, Common Sense Investing. Call now. Get your free copy, 866-779-RISK, 866-779-RISK, or go to knowyourriskradio.com. Bulwark Capital Management's a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
I'm back. All right. And as always, thanks for sticking with us, guys. Thank you for sharing part of your weekend with us as well. And if you just missed it, we just had an interview with Kevin Muir of the Macro Tourist blog. And I think Kevin is a really bright mind in the world of finance and a great thinker and a guy that I follow personally. And I would encourage you to go to the website, knowyourriskradio.com. We probably won't have this podcast up until Monday, but you can, if you missed it, you can listen to that interview with him. We talk about the recent volatility explosion and trying to dispel some myths around that. If you watch CNBC or listen to a lot of these people, you didn't hear any of this. Why? I don't really have a good answer for you. I don't know why people weren't focused on that. I don't know why people were celebrating volatility being artificially suppressed and being low. What's funny now is that with that volatility explosion that we saw, and this was echoed by the folks that I met with yesterday that got caught in that unwittingly, the lawsuits are starting to fly from the guys that were actually doing it, saying that the VIX was... that the VIX was manipulated higher. And, don't listen to any of that. I even heard Cramer talking about, there's going to be lawsuits. And the lawsuits can be, they probably will come, guys. But once again, everybody's looking at it wrong. The lawsuits are not the guys that were long volatility that made money. And I know that's not popular to say, right? If you lose money, you're a victim. If you make money, you're an evil capitalist. And you probably made that money by stealing lunches from little kids, right? That's the way that such is the world that we live in now. But it's a joke. The repression or the artificial suppression of volatility, that was the real criminal act. That was the collusion. That was the irresponsible activity. And the way to think about it, and we've said this before about volatility, volatility is the price of insurance. If you're an insurance company and you go out there and you sell insurance and you know you don't have the assets to pay the claim if it comes due, what are you called? You're called a fraud. Well, the exact same is true with volatility in the VIX. And again, I don't want to focus on it so much because I don't want people going out there and trading the VIX. if you look at a chart, it looks fun, it looks exciting, but it should be used in a hedged manner only at all times. You need to understand it. You need to understand the term structure involved. There's just a lot. And unless you're going to put in, you know, I would say unless you're going to dedicate 30 or 40 hours to understanding what the VIX actually is, you shouldn't touch it. But it just goes to show how much, you know, just wrong thought there is out there and how flippant people are with giving, you know, advice and how wrong-headed so much of it is and how people are so willing to talk about things. We refer to it as strong opinions loosely held, you know. And if you want an example of that, again, not to pick on the guy, but if you want a perfect example of strongly opinions loosely held, go listen to Jim Cramer. I mean, one minute he's advocating his clients to go in there and buy FANG hand over fist, and the next he's sitting there going, you know, this is why you should have cash in the portfolio. And I'm sitting there going, Jim, which one is it? Right? Are you a trader or are you an investor? And I just think that this is where discipline comes into play. This was what risk management is supposed to do, right? We never want to be taking more risk than we should. We don't want to be investing in things we don't understand. And that doesn't mean you just need to buy grocery stores or retailers, right? What it means is you need to focus on diversification. And in that light, I want to shed... I had a really cool week. I want to talk about it. Headed back to New York for a conference. Got in Sunday and by the grace of God was able to leave Tuesday night. Was supposed to fly out 9:30 Eastern Standard Time on Wednesday morning. And my wife, being the far more brilliant of the two, she's your better half. And I go, no, she's my better three-fourths. But she was watching the weather, concerned that I was going to be able to get home, and rerouted the flight. So I actually got out Tuesday night, and I was flying out of Newark. And I think the next morning, on Wednesday morning, something like 3,000 flights were grounded or something crazy. So I'd probably be trying to record this show today from Manhattan had she not pulled that move. So thank you. Thank you, honey. I appreciate it. But anyway, the reason I was there was I had the privilege to go back there and meet with a real giant in the industry, a guy by the name of Roger Ibbotson. And if you don't know the name, you should go look him up. Roger Ibbotson studied with Milton Friedman at the University of Chicago. He's a PhD in economics and finance. He's a professor at Yale. He runs a Zebra Capital Management, which manages, I believe, right around $1 billion. It's a hedge fund. And he's won something like 10 awards from the CFA Institute. And, you know, I'd put him up there with Robert Shiller in that same neighborhood as Milton Friedman. I want to say Roger's like 73 now, but just been a giant in the world of finance and got to spend some time with him actually at the New York Stock Exchange on Monday and got to be in a private meeting and discussion with him. And Roger just came out last year with a white paper, a research paper, an academically written research paper specifically about... Guess what? The dirtiest word in finance, fixed indexed annuities. And Roger Ibbotson is advocating that they have a place in nearly every retail portfolio, that they will most likely be a superior alternative to fixed income and bonds over the next 10 to 15, 20 years, and that they're an excellent way to safely hedge against inflation. And I don't tell you this to sit there and say, oh, look how smart I am. Truthfully, when he came out with that white paper, it was more like kind of wiping my brow going, you know what, thank goodness that we were right. And we're getting the, you know, not like we were taking a gamble, but it's always nice to get that edification or get that certified stamp from a giant in the industry like Roger Ibbotson, who really doesn't have a dog in the fight, right? He already manages a hedge fund and they invested in stocks only. But he put out an entire research paper that's about 16 pages long, and we're going to post it on knowyourriskradio.com. And it's something everybody should read. So when you hear these people out there telling you that, A, Bulwark is an annuity shop, you know the truth. We're not. We use them as a fixed income alternative, bond alternative. And when you hear them tell you how bad they are, and I can't tell you, you go talk to all the advisory firms, including the ones that currently manage your money, bring them up. They're going to tell you their high fees or this. They don't know what they're talking about. And so what I'd like to tell you is, rather than taking it from me, just a voice on the radio, who do you think knows more about this? Roger Ibbotson, who studied with Milton Friedman and runs a $1 billion hedge fund and founded the Zebra Index and blah, you know, professor of economics and finance at Yale, or the local Edward Jones guy? And no knock on Edward Jones or any firm, but I'm just saying, these guys who are telling you these are horrible, when your bond portfolio is leaking oil 2, 3, 4 years from now, they're going to bring them up sheepishly. Right? That's when they're going to tell you. This change is going to happen. We just happen to be ahead of the curve for the grace of God. And I know it's not a popular word. The people that I sat down with yesterday, great people. But they said, you know, you're pretty brave to talk about that on the radio. And I said, well, why is that? And they go, it's toxic. Everywhere you go, they tell you how bad they are. And I said, you know what? Honestly, I believe that's our job, right? Just like it was to unveil the whole volatility issue and expose that so you guys knew what risks were out there, the ones you could see, the ones you couldn't. It's also to talk to you about ways that we can protect, that you can be insured against loss, that you don't have to pay a management fee for. And you can still capture anywhere from 60% to 70% of the upside of the index. Sometimes even outperform the index. And when we compare it to bond funds or CDs or money market accounts, it's not even close. Now, again, we believe it should be part of a diversified portfolio. Some people have more, some people have less. But if you want to know more about these and how we do it, because I will say this, to be fair to the other people out there talking bad about them, there are bad ones out there, or ones that don't do what you think they're going to do. Ones that have upfront signing bonuses, that have 1.5% annual management fees, that have 6% performance caps per year. We want to avoid all that. We don't want to lay them down with insurance riders and enhanced death benefits. It kills our long-term returns. But if you are looking for an alternative to cash, if you are looking for a safe alternative for your money that's going to generate you more than the inflation rate, that's going to average somewhere between 5.5% to 7% a year and guarantee you against loss, guys, there's no other game in town. Why do we use them? I'm not a huge fan of annuities. I think they're kind of boring, but they're invaluable for our clients, assuming you pick the right ones. And they're not your grandmother's annuity. I hate, like I've said before, I hate the fact they're called annuities. But we talk about them all the time, and I don't want to, you know, bore you, but it was really cool for us to sit down and talk with Roger Ibbotson, get it right from the horse's mouth, read the research that he did, an exhaustive research paper on it. So we're going to post that white paper on knowyourriskradio.com. It should be up there by the time the show's on. So you can go to our website and read it. And it's thick, but you know, it's got the things in there that you need to know. It's got the comparisons and the charts and all that kind of stuff. And it compares them directly to bonds. So it really edifies the approach that we've taken for the last 6 years. And I think it's an essential tool in educating yourself about alternatives out there. So anyway, as always, if you want to speak to me about it, give us a call, 866-779-RISK. You can set up a free phone consultation or a meeting in person. You can also request our free booklet, Common Sense Investing, where we talk about these products that Roger Ibbotson just wrote that research paper on, and we compare them to bonds. So anyway, give us a call. Go to the radio show website, knowyourriskradio.com. We got to run and take a quick break, but we'll be right back. Thanks for listening. This is Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
Are you worried about running out of money in retirement or being a burden on family members due to an extended healthcare situation? Hey, it's Story Monson. I want you to go see Brian Ott with 525 Advisors. He's the host of Long-Term Care Radio right here on Cairo every Saturday morning at 7. I want you to see Brian because 3 out of 4 of us will end up in a long-term care situation during our retirement years. And if you're not prepared, it can mean watching everything you've worked hard for get whittled down by the high costs, family members often pay a price because they're forced to put their lives on hold, but you can protect yourself and your family. Do what my wife and I did. Go learn about the new options available at Brian's next long-term care planning class. You'll learn about the newest options, including plans that pay you back if you never use them. It's free. It's coming up April 7th. Brian will even give you a copy of his book, A Guide to Long-Term Care Planning. Sign up today. Go to 525longtermcare.com. That's 525longtermcare.com.
Are you worried that a market collapse like 2000 and 2008 could constrain or delay your retirement? Or maybe you're sitting on a pile of cash earning nothing? If so, call us and request our complimentary booklet, Common Sense Investing. Hi, it's Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer of Bulwark Capital and host of Know Your Risk Radio. We'll show you how you can protect your retirement portfolio against loss, but still participate in market gains. Safety doesn't have to mean lower returns. Our clients have increased their returns while being insured against loss. Stocks, bonds, and real estate are all at record highs. So why risk it? And like our client Dory Monson says, go from retirement hoping to retirement planning.
I am indeed a client, and I recommend Zach to you. Get Zach's booklet, Common Sense Investing. Call now. Get your free copy, 866-779-RISK, 866-779-RISK, or go to knowyourriskradio.com. Bulwark Capital Management's a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
All right, welcome back to the show. And we got to make this one quick because we went a little bit over on our interview with Kevin Muir. And I would encourage you guys all to go to knowyourriskradio.com if you missed that and hear what he has to say. As a reminder, Kevin was the guy that we had on in early December where he and I spent an entire hour talking about volatility and how it was suppressed and how we expected to get ugly once it exploded. Sure enough, first week of February, that's exactly what took place. And now we're looking at just shooting the last two trading days. We got the Dow down almost 12,000 or 1,200 points. And so volatility has made a ferocious comeback. So what does this mean for you guys? Right? What this means, once again, let's put things in context, because we're still, the S&P is still only 8.5-9% off its all-time highs. Okay? I know the numbers are ugly and it looks bad, but what this should do is this should serve as a reminder of there is risk out there, guys. And look, I'm not saying this is the beginning of the next financial collapse. Honestly, I don't think it is. I think we might run a little more to the downside here. I don't see that. You know, the big, and look, that's not saying, I don't have a crystal ball, so that's not saying it's not going to happen. But what this return of volatility should do is remind everybody that equities go down, right? This isn't anything new. Trump doesn't have magic sauce to keep elevating assets continually. I think he's doing a lot of good things that are good for the economy. Don't get me wrong. But remember, the economy could keep getting stronger and equities could keep going down, guys. That's happened. Those things occur. And one of the reasons that that can happen is the United States, we've got a lot of home country bias going on right now, meaning that a lot of U.S. investors think we're the only game in town. Well, guess what? So does the rest of the world. And the index prices reflect that. We're the most expensive stock market in the world by far. And it's also the most expensive we've ever been on many different levels. And for those of you that disagree with me out there, you're going to cite P.E. ratios, right? Well, the current P.E. ratio is at 25, somewhere between 25 and 26. Long-term average is 16, okay? That's not a record high PE, but that is a 90 percentile type high PE. Every other thing we look at, market capitalization to GDP, GNP versus total financial household asset wealth, price to sales on the S&P, the amount of tech that's making up the S&P, all those things are record highs. So maybe one out of 10 metrics isn't a record high. Are there reasons for that that we've discussed in the show many times before? Yes. But this should re-interject, or this should remind you that, A, you need global diversification. Too many of us are loaded up with the S&P 500 ETF, and we think all is going to be good. Okay? You need global diversification. You also need asset class diversification. You also need portions of your portfolio, depending on how close you are to retirement, that are in a lockbox, that are guaranteed not to lose, but are going to pay us more than the inflation rate. Know Your Risk Radio. That's what we do. Risk management. Okay? So give us a call, 866-779-RISK. I'd be happy to do a phone consultation with you. We can also meet in person. You can also get our book, Common Sense Investing, Taking the Risk Out of Your Retirement. And I just do the homework. Give us a call. Set up a meeting. Whatever. I enjoy it. And if nothing else, we'll just leave you more educated. Anyway, we got to run, guys. As always, thank you so much for sharing part of your weekend with us. Hope you have a great weekend. Hope you have a great week. We'll be back next week. You've been listening to Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
Thanks for listening to Know Your Risk Radio. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Schedule your free risk review at knowyourriskradio.com. Tune in next week to Know Your Risk Radio with your host, Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.